straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 234, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. Sid Golden here with the Duck Kirk Bowles, and guess what, friends? Man, we are back in the studio at the Austin American Statesman for the first time in how long, Duck?
Over a year and a half.
Oh, my God, man. And I don't know if you guys can tell, but we've been doing them on Zoom calls because the pandemic has kind of mandated that we stay away.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no one in the Statesman, and so we're going to try in most weeks to get back down here to the studio because the sound is so much better. We had a friend, Matt Obenauer, friend of the podcast. He listens every week, our former coworker. Shout out to Oberschnauzer. He asked me, he said that the sound was a little choppy last week, and I think I'm having some internet issues at the house.
Yes,
in Pflugerville, Duck. So,
yes, you are.
No issues here today. We're going to talk to Dallas Cowboys play-by-play legend Brad Sham a little later about the game coming up at the L.A. Chargers. But first, Duck, we got news from the 40. New quarterback, and his name is Casey Thompson.
No big surprise. The surprise was he didn't start the second half against Arkansas, which I think Sark should have gone to. And I bet if he had a do-over, he would definitely do that. But you got to have a better feel. You know, he always says he's going to play both quarterbacks, but he's going to go with his gut on when to put the backup in. I thought he screwed that up. So you could say at the quarterback he's 0-2 because you're starting a different quarterback week three, and you didn't put your backup in to change the flow and momentum of the game against Arkansas. So there are two strikes against him. But I thought this was a natural, smart decision, don't you?
Yeah, I do worry, though, about what have we been talking about for 6 or 7 months. And, we're hearing that the kid was winning the job, and we saw Casey throw a pick six in the spring game on his own doorstep. And the kid had more upside. The kid's got a live arm. I'm sorry, I was watching that Arkansas game. As bad as it was, there were a couple of times when he was on the move and he let that thing go and it was tight.
He throws well on the run.
He has nice arm talent.
He does.
He's a nice quarterback.
So you got to know where it's going.
And his upside, I think, is bigger than Casey Thompson. But I think Casey Thompson's probably the better guy for the job right now.
We all thought it was going to happen mid-August.
We did, and then it changed.
Yeah.
And so for me, the uncertainty of it all, switching mid-range after we've been told the same thing, Kid Hudson Card has one bad game in a hostile environment where your offensive line was soft as tissue paper, and they got beat on big plays by an average. I'm sorry, Duck. KJ Jefferson is an average quarterback.
He is.
He's average.
He's got some upside.
He Kevin Princeton, the guy from UCLA, he did that to them, and so it wasn't a great showing by the defense, and he didn't have a lot of blocking and. They couldn't run the ball. Bijan couldn't get off. And so there are a lot of issues in that hostile environment. I think they still probably would have lost to Arkansas.
Yeah.
But I think Casey would have done a much better job because I think he's a little bit – he's much more mature, and I think he's more ready for this. And he said it to us this week, Doug, I like being the villain.
Yeah.
I like it.
He did.
I like it.
He likes being booed. And I don't know. All right, so let me ask you this. Did Sark screw up by starting Hudson Card week one and naming him his starting quarterback?
Yeah, if the leash was that short, yes, he did.
So you think he was just going with the long-term upside?
Well, I look at it this way, Kirk. I think if Hudson's as good as we think he's going to be, then maybe Sark was looking long term and he was going, okay, we're going to get him this year, and then next year he's going to blow up and he's going to throw 30 touchdown passes, mm-hmm. and he's going to be gone because he might be a early round draft pick because he's got some measurables about him. He's skinny, but he's got a big arm.
Well, he's got 3 years.
Yeah,
he's got 3 years. More.
But next year would have been 3 years.
Well, yeah,
on
right.
Campus.
Next year, but he's got this year and next year.
I'm saying, but after next year, he's saying sure. He's going to be gone. So sure. He wants to get him now.
Maybe.
And so maybe he was thinking, I get him now. I get him again next year, much improved, and then he's going to be gone. I want to get this arm talent for 2 years instead of one.
Why didn't he stick with that decision?
I don't know, because maybe they looked so bad and the kid looked a little overwhelmed in amid all of that pressure and all of that atmosphere in Fayetteville that maybe he wanted to go to a little bit more of a mature hand.
I think it's a sense of urgency. He knows how starved this fan base is for some success and Texas size success, and he doesn't want this thing getting away from him. Charlie lasted 3 years. Tom Herman lasted four tumultuous seasons and started two seasons with losses to Maryland. So I think he thought, man, could this thing go sideways? If I'm wrong on Hudson Card and, after Rice this week, which, they're going to name the score, then you got an improved Texas Tech team coming in. Not great, but improved. Then you go to TCU, then you have Oklahoma.
Oof.
So you need some answers pretty quickly.
And you need some good stuff to happen
exactly
before conference.
So in a way, I applaud him for being adaptable and not being overly stubborn. Like, no, Hudson Card's my guy. I decided that in August. I'm sticking with it. So I know, and I think you would agree with me, he doesn't want to go back and forth all year long.
Yeah, you don't want to do musical quarterbacks.
But I think he would love to decide – quickly, so it doesn't linger as a problem and a potential divisive issue in the locker room. I don't think we really know who they side with,
Oh, they follow both. They love both guys. That's what everybody was like, oh, well, we follow both guys. We love both
and
guys.
And that's never accurate, is it?
No, it's never accurate. No. It's split. Yeah. Even if it's 51-49, it's
right.
Split.
Yeah, there are going to be some that side with Card, some side with Thompson. But and I also kind of maintain this, that the whole Alamo Bowl performance, as great as it was in the second half, and it was box
electric.
Office.
It was electric.
Sark wasn't here.
He
that
wasn't.
Was still Herman.
He came in with a clean slate.
And Herman got fired a few days after
if
that.
If Tom Herman were still the coach, I think Casey Thompson would be a starting quarterback.
I do too. But the fact that it didn't happen under Sark's watch, and he was new, so he was new to Sark. He had not built up any street cred with Sark. And then to throw the pick six in the spring game.
And then have some ball security issues in practices after that.
He had one turnover in the two scrimmages, and Hudson Card had zero. So I think maybe all that kind of led to him going with Card.
Here's what Sark had to say about the decision.
The quarterback thing. Ideally, everybody wants to have a starter, the backup. Everybody wants to know what it is. We're in a unique situation. We've got two good guys. They play well. They played hard. They prepare. I think the team believes in both of them. That was evident from week one against Louisiana, week two against Arkansas. So we'll put ourselves in position to make sure that both those guys are in a position to excel. I don't know how long it's going to go, and that's – part of it is unfortunate because you like to know exactly where you are, but part of it is I kind of like it because they're making it hard, and that should be the characteristic of our team at every position, that every week you just don't know because both guys are battling so hard. And so I appreciate that about both Casey and Hudson.
So Duck, it's obvious that he's confident in Casey.
Right.
And it kind of echoes to me that it was really a close competition. It wasn't a runaway by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And he said it.
Right.
I'm glad they're making this hard. But at the same time, I still know that he wants to settle on one guy. We're not going to be able to go a full season with all of this.
Right. And you see it around the league where, Boston College quarterback is already out. And you see it other places
Aggie
as well.
Quarterback
Aggie's
is out.
Aggie's out for a length of time. So it's not all that rare, but getting back to the Arkansas game, that was a beehive. They just ran into a situation where Arkansas was not going to be denied. And it's like, I don't know if it was Bijan on Monday that told us, or DeMarvion, or Deshaun Jameson said, you know, it was never quiet. It was loud from warm-ups to that final whistle. And
those young fans in the stadium were given history lessons by grandma and grandpa and uncle and aunt.
Absolutely.
They came in and they were loud. And I was like, I know a lot of these people weren't alive, but that was raucous. And a lot of these guys on the Texas team have been in raucous environments, but I don't think they've been in anything like that, because it's one thing to go to Texas Tech, and Texas Tech hasn't been very good in a while. Texas mm-hmm. has been all over Tech lately.
Right.
K-State doesn't get that loud. We know Kansas sucks. Iowa State, not loud like that.
No.
The only one I can remember is Ohio State.
Definitely Ohio State.
Ohio State came in Arkansas in 04.
The loudest stadiums I've ever covered games in, I would think I would probably put LSU number one, and maybe Ohio State two, and then maybe Arkansas three when they're playing Texas, and then A&M. Those might be the four biggest hotbeds, you know, I've covered games in. And like I said, not enough was made of it. I think
you got it from the jump. You told me early, I'm picking Arkansas. And you didn't waver. And then I go, why? And you go, it's their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I go, that doesn't matter. Texas is better. And Texas wasn't. They weren't. And
no.
I really think a lot of it had to do with the fans.
If this
game was played last year during a pandemic in a half-empty stadium, Texas doesn't get blown out.
They may lose,
but they don't get blown out.
And I think Sark miscalculated. I think he'd been there a number of times with Alabama.
I'm sorry, it's not the same.
It is not the same.
You go in there and you're up 21-0, those guys aren't going crazy anymore.
No.
They know that Alabama's coming to town,
exactly,
and they're going to put it on us.
Exactly. So I think he had a false sense of confidence, or he either knew, one person over at UT told me, no, Sark knew what he was getting into. He didn't want to scare his team. He didn't want them to go in rattled like, they're going to be all over you. Well, but part of that's preparation for that mental side.
How do they work out for him?
Not too well. Okay, not too well. I got a question for you.
I got an answer for you.
10 times, neutral site, Texas plays Arkansas.
Texas wins 6 of those.
Really?
I think so.
I think Arkansas wins 6.
Texas is more talented.
Are they?
I think they are, not up front.
Why do you say that?
They have the best running back.
Yeah, but Arkansas has... Four good ones.
But are they starting Casey Thompson or Hudson? There you go.
We don't know.
Neutral site with Hudson, with Casey Thompson at quarterback. Is Arkansas still up 6-4? I make a case that Casey Thompson's better than KJ Jefferson, and usually the better quarterback wins.
Well, KJ, he had like 5 starts last year, you know, after
the fans have been down
Felipe
on him.
Franks got, well, he's raw.
He's raw.
He's like
he's a better version of Tyrone Swoops.
He's a
big guy,
a bulldozer. That, you know, like Quinn Grovey. I was on his radio show last week, and he said, "You got to make a business decision if you're going to tackle this dude, because he brings
And there were some business decisions made
in
that
there
secondary.
Were,
I noticed that.
But up front, both sides of the ball, Arkansas clearly looked better,
bigger, bulkier.
So that's why I would give Arkansas the 6 wins. And
close,
Texas
though.
4.
But are they going to blow them out by 19?
Oh, maybe some of the 6.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe Texas will blow Arkansas out some of the 6. But I think, and I'm telling you, for any Aggie fans listening, you better come in there with your helmet strapped on tight. Because this is a different Arkansas team. Yes, it's in Arlington at Jerry World. So I think Arkansas is, you know, they're not a great team. We know that.
No,
but
they're not.
They're going to have, I think, a winning season and go to a bowl game and surprise some people. They were 3-7 last year. They've had like, I think it's 4 straight losing seasons.
Yeah, they have.
But they're a team on the rise.
And my Aggie friends were tweeting at me and going, "Oh, welcome to the SEC." And I'm sitting there going, "Didn't you just lose your quarterback? And you're one play away from losing at Colorado. Didn't you just score 10 points?"
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are things, and now you got to face a rejuvenated Hawks. those Hogs are feeling great.
Yeah.
And A&M has had their number over these last few years. So,
and they, you know, they played New Mexico this week, and they've got a good quarterback. Terry Wilson for New Mexico is off to a great start. He's a transfer from, I'm trying to think, it's an SEC school. But I'm not saying they're going to have some issues because they're at Kyle Field, but if Zach Calzado blinks a little bit, you know, New Mexico going in there with nothing to lose. So it'll be interesting to watch.
I'm just excited to see what Casey brings to the table, Doug.
Yeah.
We talked to him. He's a film nut, and
he's so professional and polished.
He lives. But, you know, it kind of reminded me of Gerard Hurd, who checked a lot of boxes. Good with the media, great quote. But I don't know that he was a film nerd like Casey Thompson. And Casey Thompson grew up as a son of a quarterback.
He did.
So he was he had a quarterback at the dinner table. So I'm looking forward to seeing if that translates over to what's going on this weekend. And you know what? Let's hear what Casey Thompson had to say about his first career start.
Oh, yeah, I just realized today that last time I started a game was November 2017, which is crazy. But I'm excited. I've waited a long time for this opportunity. And I don't know, I just think it's a testament to perseverance and hard work. And I'm excited for this team, the opportunity that we have to bounce back and to continue to push forward and press on towards the goals that we still have at hand.
Duck, he's confident.
Yes. Every time we've talked to him, he's been confident. You know, in August when we spoke to him, his body language, everything he said, this is my team. This is my time. I've been waiting against Sam, backing up Sam Ellinger for 3 years. This is my time. This is my fourth year on campus. I am ready for this. And so I think he's going to come out smoking. You know, it's against Rice. So, again, they're going to name the score in Texas Tech. Not a great team next week. They're also at home again. So these next 2 weeks, Casey has a chance to separate himself from Hudson Card. And a lot of people might be out there going, well, yeah, Hudson Card could do the same thing, you know, two home games against Rice and Texas Tech. And they're not wrong, but timing is everything.
And Hudson's going to play. Sark said that.
Probably second half.
Yeah. I think they're going to light Rice up.
Oh, yeah.
They're angry.
They're 26-point
favorite.
They've
got Bijan Robinson. I ain't messing with no point spreads when it comes to Texas.
No.
I usually don't.
No, you know,
we're in these little pools where we compete, but we don't bet Texas.
No.
We're working that game, and I don't want that distraction,
alone.
So we leave that alone. But
absolutely.
If I were, 26 points. Rice was up 17-7 in Fayetteville.
Yeah, and then Arkansas scored 31 straight points.
Yeah.
And it was the first game of the year.
Game of the year, jitters, and I'm sure the crowd wasn't nearly as hyped as they were for the Longhorns.
You think?
You don't think they had their aisles down, Duck?
No, I don't think the Owls have a sign.
I just know the mob's not coming. That's disappointing.
No, that is disappointing.
Because you know there would have been some Hogs dressed up.
They would have had some fun. They would have. Okay, here's a question for you. Neither one of us, I believe, think quarterback is a problem area for them, correct?
I think it's the line. That's the problem.
Yes, but quarterback is not a problem.
They're going to be fine at quarterback.
Right, they're going to be fine. Offensive line.
That's a problem.
I don't know how you fix that.
They're veterans. Duck, they're veterans.
What does that tell you?
And when you're veterans who aren't getting it done and your best, most senior guy is not even at left tackle. He's at right tackle.
Exactly.
That lets me know right there that you're not all that. Jake Majors is probably has the biggest upside of anybody. He's a sophomore.
Yeah.
But he's not ready for prime time. So I think that they're not – I don't know that they're going to face – I know they're not going to face teams as big. OU has big lines, but I don't know that they're going to face another big athletic line and so good up the middle as the Arkansas Razorbacks. They were great up the middle, Duck. Their linebackers were good and their tackles were good. And I think Bijan's going to get his numbers. He's going to get his 1,200 yards this year. But I don't know that they'll face another line. But these guys, they always say a great running back makes an average offensive line a good offensive line. I think in the next 4 or 5 weeks we'll be going, oh, that offensive line's coming along. It's because they're not playing Arkansas anymore.
Oh, sure. And I'm really surprised he's not looking at the younger guys like Hayden Connor and Carrick and Tyler Johnson a little bit more.
Get him some
run. I'm
not
sure what you have to lose because I'm not sure how many snaps those three even got
Not many,
if any, against Arkansas.
It's harder for me to keep up with it when I'm at when I'm watching it from television. But I would get them in there a couple of series. They're going to get a lot of
definitely
run this weekend.
Definitely.
Because you don't want them in the portal.
Right.
You don't want them looking at that portal. That portal is, it's so easy to go, you know what, I'm going to get in the portal.
And you know what, though? By mentioning the portal, I think that's another mess up by Sark, not going in the portal to find some offensive linemen. You know, I mean.
Maybe he thought the veterans were going to be good enough. I know at one point when they rushed three and they sacked.
Yeah.
And they sacked Hudson and Sark. You could just say, he just went, man, we're horrible.
Yeah.
You could read his lips.
Yes,
I mean,
could.
He was just, he threw his hands up and he goes,
yeah,
if you can't block three with five, what are you doing? What are you doing? And they're just going to have to be better.
Well, I didn't see the creative play calling. I mean, they send Jordan Whittington in motion, hand him the ball in the jet sweep a little bit. Try the bubble screen.
Give those guys something
out in
to
the perimeter. Move the pocket.
Whittington didn't have a good game. He had a couple passes he could have caught.
Well, he had a drop, and the one in the end zone card threw it on the wrong shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
But that brings up another good point. The receiving corps has not impressed yet.
Not yet.
You know, I think Xavier Worthy's got a big upside, but
guess what, Doug?
Joshua Moore has not been seen.
Guess what, Doug? They miss Jake Smith.
Yeah, absolutely.
They miss a guy that can get open in the middle of the field, in the slot, a guy that can beat his defender and mm-hmm. get you 6 or 7 yards. There's nothing better than 2nd and 3 in college football. That's an offensive coordinator's dream. And Sark was prescient when he said, we don't want to be in 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9. And that's what they were the whole game.
No,
it was 3rd and long the whole game. They just couldn't get going. And when you're behind the chains, I don't care who you play, you're not going to win.
But their receiving corps has got a lot of proving to do. You know, I thought they would come out a lot better.
And the kid missed on some deep throws.
Yeah, he wasn't.
I don't know that Casey will miss those throws.
He wasn't accurate.
Casey doesn't have a bigger arm, but he's more accurate on the deep throw. We saw that in the Alamo Bowl. He threw mm-hmm. some absolute beautiful spirals that hit the receiver right on target for 6. So I think they're going to be better vertically. I think he's going to run for 30 or 40 yards because that's what he does.
He runs for more than that.
Yeah, and he might run for more than that. And I just think they're going to be better overall.
All right. Cameron Dicker, you worried about the kicker?
No, but I'd make sure that Bushevsky's ready to punt. I'm sorry. He's got a lot on his plate. Duck and I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago. I don't like him.
I don't either.
With all of those roles. He's the holder. I mean, he's got too much going on. I think Dicker needs to be the kicker, not Dicker the punter, not Dicker the holder. Mm-hmm. And I know he has NFL aspirations.
Card's the holder.
That's right. Card's the holder.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, if Dicker was the holder and the kicker, then we'd have some.
Dicker's the kicker, the punter, and the kickoff guy.
Yes.
Card's the holder. They need a new holder.
That's
well,
a
Card
lot.
Can hold this week.
Yeah,
he
can hold from now on as long as Casey's the guy.
So he's still starting.
I just
loves this. They score a touchdown. He's a starter. He's going to be the holder.
I don't know. Dicker's, that was a long field goal. 52 yards.
But then you drop a punt.
And you drop a punt for no reason.
Or maybe you're thinking about that field goal you just missed.
Maybe. You just don't know. But I think they're asking to be too much, too.
I think specialists should be specialists.
Yeah.
I've never liked doing both. And I think Justin Tucker may have punted when he was here. I think he did.
I don't think so.
Did you think? I thought he did a little bit of punting.
Yeah.
I'll have to look.
No, I think you're right. I think you are right.
He did some punting.
Didn't he have that fake in Wyoming?
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, like from the 10-yard line? I think you're right.
Ill-advised, yeah.
Yeah. Not a good idea.
So, yeah. So, I think the line needs work. I think the receivers need work. And I think Dicker just needs to kick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even mind him being the kickoff guy and the punter.
No, I mean
the kickoff guy and the kicker.
Right, I agree.
And just don't punt.
I agree.
Because I think Bushevsky's fine. We saw him in that practice. He was kicking them 40, 45 yards.
Right, right.
So,
or
yeah.
Look for somebody else. I mean, come on. Let's go.
You got a roster. You got a roster.
Transfer portal.
Well, Duck, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. We're going to be all over it. We're going to double team the Rice game.
It's such a big game.
That's how important this game is.
It's going to be a
two column game.
Yeah,
only a few two column games.
Aren't
traditionally.
Many.
Oklahoma,
right.
The bowl game, and Rice. Those are usually the three.
We got those circled
in red ink. So we're going to be all over it on hook'em.com. And Duck, you know, we talked college. let's get to our pro guest.
Let's do it.
On Second Thought.
Duck, always a pleasure to have Brad Sham, the immortal voice of the Dallas Cowboys, joining us on the podcast. The Cowboys lost 31-29 to the Tampa Bay Bucks, but that's all right. We still get to talk to Brad. How you doing, Brad?
I'm hanging in there, Seth. How are you?
The one, the only, Brad Sham.
Hardly immortal, though. I'll tell you, you can tell my bad back about that immortal stuff. I think he's got a different idea.
In the interest of full disclosure, this is our first day back in the studio, as our listeners have heard, and I'm an idiot, and I'm making sure this thing works, and I don't even think I created a new file the first time,
my
Brad.
Goodness. Oh, my
but
goodness.
But now, Brad, we're rolling. We're recording. It feels good.
What is this, take five? What is it?
This is take number two, and I think it's going well. Shout out to Chandler Hoffley, our producer.
If I was not a kind soul, I would say, if I were snarky, I would say something like, what does your being an idiot have to do with taping over that last segment? But not, so I won't say anything like that.
Well, I always kid him. I said, don't remove all doubt. Have some people wondering. You don't have to just come out and say you're right.
I put Brad on a long leash. She shouted me out on my birthday years ago on game day, and I was getting all these calls, all these texts. You're famous. I go, yeah, I work at the Statesman. I'm city famous. I'm not national. They go, no, Brad Sham shouted you out. And I was like, wow. And I had just eaten lunch with him. I don't think he's ever shouted you out on your birthday.
No, well, why are you rubbing it in?
Because I'm not sure that they've ever had a game on Kirk's birthday.
That's a good point. That's
Kirk,
good
if this
point.
Makes you feel any better, I believe the day of your birthday was the day before the game against Tampa.
Correct.
And I gave you the same shout-out consideration that I gave Charlie Waters, whose birthday was the next day. Neither was on the day of the game.
Okay. We'll take what we can get.
I'm going to tell you, I'm so glad you mentioned Charlie Waters. That was an epic Texas Sports Hall of Fame banquet. We're all on the selection committee, and Brad is a longtime MC of the event.
And Hall of Famer.
You know, and a Hall of Famer himself. And if you really love that event, then you can't miss it. There's nothing. Wild horses can't drag a true lover of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame from it. I was there. Brad was there. I don't remember Kirk.
You know that Kirk is the new co-chair of the selection committee.
Along with our friend Melanie Hauser.
Yeah.
Why are you rubbing it in, Brad?
I don't think either of them was there, but Kirk had an illness in the family to attend to.
Yes.
So he gets a pass, but it was, I'll tell you what, I was actually thinking about it driving home, and the next day said that I'm not sure that banquet gets enough notice, and it's normally a springtime deal, and
right. It
ought to be. Tough to do it at the precipice of football season, but
that's tough.
You know, last year there wasn't one at all. But when you look at the, as you guys know, because as you said, we are all three on the selection committee, the committee goes to some pains to provide a ballot for the voters, including the public and past inductees, that is really reflective of the richness of the diversity of sports in our state. That's gender, racial, and across all different sports lines. And so when you're sitting there with DeMarcus Ware and Charlie Waters and Shane Leckler, and you're also sitting there with Michelle Carter
Francie
LaRue Smith and the great female basketball players who were installed. And I mean, it's just, to me, it is as if you are really a Texas sports fan, it's a can't-miss thing, because you're going to get some of the very best that our state has to offer, and it's that way every year. I really appreciate the opportunity to be involved with it.
Well, it's just a monumental task, you know, selecting, you know, from so many worthy and deserving candidates, and like you say, Brad, it's the magnitude and the diversity of the people that we have to consider. You're talking, you know, NFL down to, not down, but NFL, rodeo, soccer,
right.
Mountain climbing. Right. We've had mountain climbers we've voted on.
We voted on, yes.
Any manner of sports people, bowling.
What about black sports writer that's pre-diabetic? Will he ever get a vote?
Well, like you said, the diversity and magnitude is great. So throw your name in the hat. We'll see.
But you know what?
Breathtaking.
The shocking part is I talked to Kirk the next day and I go, I got out of there at 8:30. He goes, did you leave early? I go, no, they finished.
No, you had the right MC who's not getting paid for by the minute. And who had a noon kickoff the next day.
Why were those speeches so short? Did you mandate it, Brad?
No, you know what? That's dumb luck because, as you guys know, I mean, every year they are given a guideline, please don't exceed X number of minutes.
Right.
And then every now and then you get a Bud Adams, God rest his soul, or, you know, you'll get somebody who goes 20. And we didn't have any of those. This was a very coachable, well-coached from Leroy Burrell all the way down to the end. Everybody was really right on point time-wise, and that was the key.
But it's good you coached them up.
And we even had the presentation to the widow of the late Robert Hirst, the great artist who we lost to cancer, whose paintings and of the inductees have always been such an important part of the presentation of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, both that night and then to any visitor. And then his successor, his hand-picked successor, had done a painting of him, of Robert, to present to his wife. So we even had that thrown in. And I won't lie to you, Cedric, I was proud of the time we got out of there.
Yeah,
as an MC,
yeah.
I always say, if the idea, I don't want to overly stress, let's get this done, because if the idea is to be done, then you don't really ever have to start.
Right, right.
You can be done without doing it. On the other hand, nobody's there for breakfast.
Exactly.
So you know,
8:30's got to be a record, Brad.
It was pretty good.
That's pretty good. And we should tell people, Texas Sports Hall of Fame, they're in Waco, Texas, right in the middle of the state. It's definitely worth your while.
Man, if you haven't gone to that thing, you're missing out.
You're missing out.
It's a history lesson.
It's a history. But let's talk some football. We know the NFL has started. College football, it's not quite started yet, right, Sid?
It may have ended.
But I read a lot, you know. I thought Texas was back. What's going on?
Oh my goodness!
How many times can they be back? I mean, that's like
I don't know,
like,
but they're gone again.
Yeah, it's like that movie. It's like that movie, Final Destination. How do you make five of those?
They're way back.
It's not the final destination if there are five of them.
Not quite so final.
And I heard you got in a little trouble for on the Twitter world. Is that right,
just
Brad?
A little, you know, I was watching the game with some friends, and I was watching. We had the Texas Arkansas game on a big screen, and I had Missouri and Kentucky on my iPad because Missouri's my alma mater.
Right. Oh,
so
yeah.
Late in the game. And of course Texas is my second team because of the years that I did the Longhorns.
Right.
So I'm very much for them, but we were actually talking about how unproductive Twitter is.
Oh yeah.
And, so I said, here, let's just see if I can get some kind of so I tweeted late in the game, are Texas defensive players on scholarship?
Ooh.
Oh,
and I did get some reactions.
Did you?
A couple of which, yes. A couple of which were, yeah, but the Cowboys are worse, or the Cowboys are that bad and they're getting paid. So I have learned enough not to get drawn offside twice.
Exactly.
So I did not come back and say, we're not talking about the Cowboys. They're not playing tonight. So I just let it go.
I'm going to tell you, though, I think Texas fans would have taken a 31-29 loss at Arkansas. They'd be feeling a little bit better
over
about
what
that.
Happened.
Over what happened.
Oh,
and that's what
in a second.
The Cowboys lose to Tampa. They play at the Los Angeles Chargers in that swanky new stadium. But, man, I'm not into moral victories, Brad. But, man, they gave the defending world champions all they could handle. And Dak Prescott throwing for 403 yards and three touchdowns. looking great. The two most important ankles in the Metroplex, Dak and Amari Cooper, they put on a real show, Brad, and that's got to bode well going up against a, you know, this is like a Buccaneers light, these young Chargers. They have a good quarterback and they have some good receivers. So it's going to be a similar test, but I kind of like Dallas's chances to go in there and get a dub. What do you think?
Well, you said a whole bunch, and and I'm just looking up, and the great Chad Hennings is walking right down the sidewalk here.
From Air Force.
So I have to stop and pay attention to another great Texas Sports Hall of Famer, an Outland Trophy winner.
Absolutely.
Commander Hennings, would you like to say hello to the Austin podcast audience? Say hello.
Greetings, Austin podcast audience.
Hey, Hennings, how are you?
As you were.
What a legend.
Yeah.
You can't beat this.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, I look up and there's Chad Hennings. What am I going to tell you?
Love it.
Here's the thing. You said a lot there. And so, first of all, I'm not into moral victories either. And you have to be encouraged. I did not expect them to be ahead with a minute 24 to play. I did not expect them to be ahead with a minute 24 to play after having trailed by 11 points. And they just didn't play well enough to win the game. To win that game, you had to play nearly perfectly. Mm-hmm. And the kicking game alone, I mean, obviously the kicker left, I'm not counting the 60-yarder, he left 4 points
right
out there. The decision by the special teams coach to not kick touchbacks because they wanted them to return.
Mm-hmm.
Kicks. They did that three times, and two of the three were run back to near midfield.
Yeah, not good.
Now, I'm not very smart, but I don't think giving Tom Brady half a field is exactly the blueprint for success.
It's bad enough to give him the ball.
Yeah,
anywhere.
Exactly. And so you know, I thought that was poor, and the pass rush was less than what they need. And, you know, as great as he was, Prescott had a couple of missed throws. The missed block by Jarwin on the option play late. Oof. And then some people say, yes, but I want my multi-million dollar running back to beat that guy in the open field anyway.
Right.
So, okay, with all of that, they went into, and the place was rocking. It was a great atmosphere. I'm not sure which one was the COVID section, but it was a great atmosphere, and they withstood it. Prescott's success really did not surprise me. I've kind of accepted that that's who he is. Cooper's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say he's a different story is if you look at his home road splits just in the time he's been in Dallas.
He doesn't always show up on the road.
No. He's poor on the road.
Right.
Except for last year.
Right.
Last year, he was really good on the road. What was different about last year?
No fans.
No fans.
That's Thank right. you.
No fans.
No atmosphere to beat.
Yeah.
But the fact that he walked into as hostile an atmosphere as you'll get outside of playing a division game.
Right.
And for him to show up like that, I think that's extremely encouraging. And it's good because it gets him going. So, you know, the good news is they played great against a team that's better than them. They absolutely had a chance to win. Many aspects of their team were probably better than they expected. There were plenty of coaching points left, so that's all good. Now, my experience covering this league is that for whatever reason, last week has nothing to do with this week.
Right.
And so they have now put themselves in a position of building expectations,
mm-hmm.
and it wouldn't. I would be more surprised if they performed on that level against the Chargers than I would if they dropped off a little bit. They don't know this team. I thought last year, in the fourth quarter of the year, mm-hmm. if not the second half, I thought Justin Herbert was as good a quarterback as I saw.
He was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the first half of their win against Washington. I mean, they succeeded against a much better defense than Dallas has.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
absolutely.
They have. So, he's earned his chops.
You know, they Washington lost their quarterback. You don't know what would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But still, Herbert is a stud. He is a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
The receivers especially, the last time the Cowboys played that team, it was here, but Williams and Allen, they're exceptional. They are exceptional.
Right.
Now, I'd be interested to see if they just put Diggs on Williams like they did on Evans last mm-hmm. week. He pretty much took Evans out after the first catch.
He did.
But now what they don't have compared to Tampa is the depth and versatility at tight end.
Mm-hmm.
Their runners are a little above average, I would say. They're not great. Their offensive line's completely rebuilt. And some people will recall when it came down to time for them to draft and the two cornerbacks were gone and they traded back, the debate was, do you take Micah Parsons or do you take Rashawn Slater?
Mm-hmm.
I think both teams are and were going to be happy with their choice. But Slater had a phenomenal game. Mm-hmm. He's their left tackle.
Right.
And they've brought in a center who was an all-pro at Green Bay, played for McCarthy, and a right tackle who was a solid player, played for McCarthy, and a left guard who was with the Steelers. And so they've just completely rebuilt the offensive line. And then defensively, they can say all they want about Terrence Steele being improved. I'm not sure how much of that was apparent to my uneducated eyes in preseason.
He ain't Lyle.
But I he's not Lyle, and I don't like the matchup with him and Joey Bosa.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't like any matchup with Joey Bosa.
Yeah, well, but that's what you're going to get.
Yes,
so,
you are.
That is something to keep an eye on. There, you know, Brandon Staley is the Chargers' new head coach.
Right.
And he was a tremendous defensive coach with the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
And he has brought a multiple front disguise defense. It's going to test Dak and it's going to test the receivers to read it. I think, and frankly, before the regular season started, I looked at it and I said, here's one thing that could happen. This team could easily be 0-2 and then still climb back and be okay at the end of the year. If they can be 1-1, if they can win they can win the game.
Sure.
But it's going to be hard. And if they can win the game, then I think they are really in pretty good shape.
Well, let me ask you this. Is Zeke Elliott still going to be the highest priced decoy in the NFL?
See, here's the thing. You have to stop looking at his production measured only in carries and yards.
Mm-hmm.
What he does in the passing game.
Pass pro.
I mean, the good thing about him is that he is not a selfish player. Now, he wants the ball. They all mm-hmm. want the ball. Every receiver wants the ball. Jason Witten wanted the ball. He
sure.
just would go complain to Romo about it in the training room where nobody could see him. So, it's not that Elliott wants to be a blocking fullback, but his pass protection is exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
He had a receiving touchdown on the play before the one that Jarwin didn't get the block for him. If Prescott had gotten the ball out on time, had seen him in the right flat,
right,
then Zeke would have had a touchdown. Now, you know, they'll find ways to use him. They'll probably find ways to use him more than they did in statistical categories.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't look at him as a decoy. I look at him as a real important part of what they're doing offensively, and some of it may be receptions, and some of it may be blocking, and some of it will be running. But
right.
I think he's still one of their major weapons.
And Tampa Bay is known for their rush defense. You know, you got a great run defense, you know, play to your strength. And so you have, you know, Dak throwing 58 times. That's not going to be a recipe every week.
And they did not have Zach Martin, and
right.
they will this week.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll see.
Exactly.
We'll see.
I just think it's a great opportunity to if they can get to 1-1, and you got these three home games coming up. You got the Eagles, Panthers, Giants. Those are all winnable games.
They're all winnable. That's why I think this is so important. Sure. They could be on a really good tear if they're able to do that. You know, here's another interesting aspect that I'm kind of looking forward to seeing. When you play the Rams, that's whose stadium that is.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I don't know how many Charger season ticket holders there are.
That's a good point.
They didn't sell out Jack Murphy.
No. Right. I would not be surprised if
I know where he's going.
There were more Cowboy fans than Charger fans there for the game. Going.
I hear that.
They travel. The Buffalo Bills, Dallas Cowboys, and Pittsburgh Steelers. They travel better than anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Green Bay. Yep. Right.
Definitely Green Bay. Is kicker a problem? Is Zuerlein, you know, I know they brought in the guy from the practice squad. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. But
until they sign him.
Is that an issue? Is that an issue?
I can pronounce it if I have it written out in front of me. Now, Kirk, you have just questioned two ways, and it's an important distinction.
Okay.
We were talking in training camp a few years ago about something, waiting for a Jason Garrett press conference, and Babe Laufenberg, my booth broadcast partner, said, you know, just because you can identify a problem doesn't mean you can identify the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's deep.
And Christy Scales, our exceptional
right
sideline reporter, said, if you have a problem and you cannot identify the solution, then you have an issue.
Mm.
And so what you asked me there, Kirk, was first, do they have a problem? And then, is there an issue? So I'm going to say there's a problem. It's not yet an issue, but give me a week.
Okay. Hey, kickers. Lives of a kicker is week to week, or kick to kick when you look at it.
Can't miss in a dome.
Laufenberg tells the story better than I do, but I think it was Bill Parcells' first year, and they signed Mike Vanderjack, who at that time was the all-time NFL field goal percentage leader.
Right.
And he just wasn't the same guy.
Yeah.
And so he had a horrible camp, poor preseason, and after one of the preseason games or a bad practice, reporters went up to Vanderjack in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome and asked him about it. He said, hey, no, look, I've been doing this a long time. I've had a lot of success. There's nothing to worry about. Then they went to Parcells and repeated that. Parcells said, tell him I'm worried. Babe actually has T-shirts that his sons had printed up and wore for him one Christmas morning. One of them says, there's nothing to worry about. The other one says, tell him I'm worried.
He was never the same after he missed that kick in the playoff game against the Steelers. And Steelers went on to win a Super Bowl that year, I believe.
Right.
That was 09.
You never know when a kicker's going to lose it. How about Anthony Brown at cornerback? Is that a problem?
I don't see it as a problem. You know, one of the ones that looked the worst was because another defensive back fell down in coverage and so was not able to help where he was supposed to, and it looked bad for Brown. Anthony Brown's a solid player. No one ever mistook him for Mel Renfro.
Mm-hmm.
He's a solid player. May or may not be better in the slot. He's the second best cornerback they have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not as good a corner as most of the receivers he was covering last week. And he's not as good a corner as probably the receivers he'll be mostly covering this week.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a solid pro. He'll make some plays. Generally a good tackler. They have to be assignment sound all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of teams who don't have two all-star corners.
Oh, yeah.
You've probably got one here.
Yeah. Yep.
And the other one, is, you know, maybe it'll be Joseph when he gets healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. I don't know that he was quite emotionally ready. And you can't solve every problem on a football team at once. There's too many places.
Well, How'd you see the NFC East, Brad?
Well, you know, the Eagles had an impressive outing, and you know, we don't know if that's them or Atlanta.
Right,
it's Atlanta.
But so they're probably better than people thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Washington's got a little challenge now with its quarterback.
Exactly.
The thing that surprised me was the Chargers. This is a little scary for this week. I watched the first half of that game last night. They handled that Washington front, and that's a really good defense. That's one of the best defenses in the league.
Definitely.
So I always think, Kirk, that when the season starts, last year's champion should be the favorite until someone shows me differently. So to me, Washington's still the team to beat, and the next two or three weeks will tell if that's changed at all. And the Giants will be a pain in the neck for a lot of people because that's how division games are.
Sure.
So I think it's close. I think Dallas has got as good a chance as anybody to win it, but they're going to have to prove it.
And I like Saquon Barkley did nothing. I don't know what he had, 10 carries, something like that. You know, very, very little impact. So I don't know if they're going to just kind of slowly play him into the season or what. But,
yeah, you know, I'm not sure he's 100%.
I'm not either. Yet.
That was a bad knee.
Yeah, I stayed away from him in fantasy league. A running back after the ACL. Because we gamble, Brad. I went to a Catholic high school.
There's a lot of ways to gamble.
And he does those too.
I'll throw your money away. You can give me, just send me your money.
It's so much cheaper, Brad.
In fact, send me half of what you're going to lose. I'll be happy, and you'll wind up ahead.
I won the league. I won the league.
If you love football, then you can't love fantasy football. Because fantasy football is all about statistics, and football is about sacrifice and teamwork.
Listen.
And the two don't have anything to do with each other.
So, what do you have to say to Kirk Bowles, who's also in a fantasy league baseball league?
Exactly. I'm addicted.
It's an individual sport anyway.
I'm addicted. So,
baseball is an individual sport to begin with. I throw, you hit, someone else fields.
Okay, okay, Brad, I hear that. So to be fair, instead of team stats, we use individual stats in fantasy league football. So we take the individual part of it. So I think we're good on that.
Let me ask you this. Do you play fantasy college football?
No, I just don't have the interest in fantasy league college football.
But would you?
No. Pro's more fun. And I work on Saturdays. It wouldn't be as fun.
Yeah, no, I understand. Here's my point. I run into Cowboy fans who play fantasy football, and the guy they've got is playing the Cowboys, so they don't have to root against their team.
Yeah.
Okay, those aren't fans, Brad. Those are not fans. Those are idiots.
Well, they think they are.
They are.
Yeah.
Can't root against your team.
That is the inherent evil of fantasy football.
But you said that you run into them actually at games. They pay money to come to games and then they pull against their team?
No, they tweet. They come up to me during the week. I had a guy come up to me at a religious service and ask me who did I think would have more yards?
Goodness.
C.D. Lamb or Amari Cooper. And I said, hey, Jim, I'm not going to help you with your fantasy football. I'm against it.
Wow.
Just tell him you're worried.
Yeah, exactly.
The good thing, though, Brad, is I will say this, and Kirk can vouch. Kirk's only been doing fantasy league football for about 4 or 5 years, right, Duck?
Oh, maybe a little longer.
How long? How much longer?
We started a baseball fantasy league in the 70s. And you know what? It's fun having a little juice on it because I'm not a gambler. You know, I've been to Vegas like 2 times.
Well, I believe you are disproving that theory with your very words. Of course, you're a gambler.
Well, if you put in $50, I spend that on gin and tonics. You know,
it's a $120 bucks to get in, $125 bucks to get in.
So, what's your addiction, Brad?
This is
Dr. Phil.
You're ahead of the money.
This is Dr. Phil. What's your addiction?
Yeah, we
Brad?
All have vices. What's yours, Brad? Don't say chocolate.
No, sadly, it's food. Have you seen me?
Not enough.
No, I can't see over my gut.
Not enough.
I haven't seen you.
Oh, yeah. My God. So, man, this has been heaven, man. We appreciate it so much.
I will tell you, you know what? The answer to your question is procedural crime dramas on television.
Oh, is that right?
What's your favorite?
Oh, yeah.
What do you watch?
What's my favorite?
Yes.
You know, here's where my life has devolved.
I love Bosch.
First thing that I do when I get into a hotel room or when I'm on the middle of the day is find a USA, because there's either a Law and Order or an NCIS of some kind on that channel. And I have that on like music in the background now.
I knew you were family.
But do you watch Dateline? Do you watch the real drama?
No.
Don't.
God, no.
I have 10 Datelines taped, and I binge every so often. I never get tired of Law and Order or SVU. Did you see the new organized crime one?
Of course.
I
can't wait for the new season.
Oh, I love it.
My very favorite was Criminal Intent. I have the entire Criminal Intent series on DVD.
It's my favorite. Brad, it's my favorite Law and Order. Vincent D'Onofrio is the one line. Remember when his mentor... Turns out his mentor was a murderer, and he had the epic line, "You kill five people to get me back in the game." I was like, it was gold. It was just absolute gold.
Jeff Goldblum 1 year was the lead after D'Onofrio. It was fantastic.
Well, I tell you what, if that's your one addiction, I feel so comfortable for you, and
that's
and
why
happy
he's,
for
that's
you.
Why he's rich, because he hasn't gambled and he's binged on
that's a,
on
that's
food.
A reflection of what I get paid.
Man, we love
making,
you.
I'm not making Kirk Bowles or Cedric Gold.
Oh, okay.
You got that right. You sure are not. You got that right.
Oh man, this has been a piece of heaven, man. You have a great trip to L.A. We'll be listening to you on the radio, as always. And
all right, boys.
You're the best.
Thank you, man. We love you.
See you, Brad.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
On Second Thought.
Duck, what a great podcast. Man, it's so good to be back in the studio.
Feels good, doesn't it?
To see you live and in person instead of on a computer screen. I'm sure a lot of readers would rather just keep you on the computer screen.
Oh, yeah, you know.
But I can see you, and it's just great to be in a studio and have this great sound. And Chandler Hoffley, Adam Fish, they do a great job helping a couple of computer illiterate bozos bring you a podcast. And we can't begin to thank them enough. But that's going to do it for episode 234 of On Second Thought. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, I'm Sid Golden, and we'll see you at the game.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.